Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, text number 20. Word meanings: Idam, this, He, all, Vishwam, cosmos, Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, Iva, almost the same, Itaraha, different from, Yataha, from whom, Jagat, the worlds, Sthana, exists, Nirodha, annihilation, Sambhavaha, creation, Tathi, all about, Swayam, personally, Veda, no, Bhavan, your good self, Tata api, still, Te unto you, Pradeshamatram, a synopsis only. Bhavata, unto you, Radarshitam, explain. Idam hi Vishvam Bhagavan Ivetaro.
Idam hi Vishvam Bhagavan Ivetaro.
Yato jagat sthana nirodha sambhavaha. Tadhi swayam veda bhavang satapite. Pradesha matram bhavata pradarshitam.
Pradesha matram bhavata pradarshitam.
Idam hi Vishvam Bhagavan Ivetaro. Yato jagat sthana nirodha sambhava.
Yato jagat sthana nirodha sambhava.
Tadhi swayam veda bhavang satapite.
Tadhi swayam veda bhavang satapite.
Pradesha matram bhavata pradarshitam.
Pradesha matram bhavata
Idam hi Vishvam Bhagavan Ivetaro.
Idam hi Vishvam Bhagavan Ivetaro.
Yato jagat sthana nirodha sambhava.
Yato jagat sthana nirodha sambhava.
Tadhi swayam veda bhavang satapite.
Tadhi swayam veda bhavang satapite.
Pradesha matram bhavata pradarshitam. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Himself this cosmos, and still He is aloof from it. From Him only has this cosmic manifestation emanated. In Him it rests, and unto Him it enters after annihilation. Your good self knows all about this. I have given only a synopsis. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I'm going to review a little bit here from this chapter so we can understand the context of this verse. Narada's instructions begin in text number 8, where he tells him that his problem is that he hasn't directly broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. So he says, you've done very well in describing religious principles, but that's not enough. That's why you're not feeling satisfied. And it's in the context of that that we have the two famous verses. The first one that says, words that don't glorify the Lord are like places of pilgrimage for crows. And then the next verse, it says, transcendental words that can create a revolution in people's impious lives, then they're accepted by, what is the word, phrase, purified men who are thoroughly honest. So those kinds of words are glorified, or shastras that contain those words. So the point here is that what Vyasadeva has done has mostly been karmakanda, and that's not ultimately beneficial. So in the next verse, Narada says that even jnana, knowledge of self-realization, even though free from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of a conception of the infallible. What then to speak of karmic activity? So even jnana, even because you've written the karmakanda section of the Vedas, or compiled them, and then all those contain, then you have the Upanishads, which are the jnana section of the Vedas, and those are also not beautiful, not fully satisfying. So what to speak of the karmakanda section, even though the jnana kanda section is higher. So then he tells Vyasadeva that you're qualified to do more than that. Your vision is completely perfect. Your good fame is spotless. So you've done everything correctly, so you're a very qualified person. But the scriptures that you've given, most of them, they're just agitating to the mind. They just as the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. So again, he's making this point that the karmakanda section of the Vedas, they're not going to be helpful to people, ultimately. In fact, then he gives the heavy verse where he says, these scriptures they're condemned, they're condemnable. Because, really, they're condemnable because people don't get ultimate benefit from karmakanda. So then he says, you're expert and you're qualified, only certain persons are qualified to teach the higher thing. Most people, even many gurus, they know about karma and they know about jnana, but they don't know about bhakti. But you know about bhakti. So you know you can give the highest thing. Therefore, that's what you should do. And then he said, and that basically what Narada is telling Vyasadeva is that you should be making devotees. Instead of keeping people entangled in material life, you should be making devotees because you're qualified. You're a pure devotee of the Lord, so why are you teaching them these things? You should be making them into devotees. And then he says, and even if you think that, well, maybe they're not qualified, they'll take up Krishna consciousness and then they'll fall down, that's okay. Because they've made some progress, and whatever progress they made, they won't lose that. But if you just keep them in karmakanda activities, and even though they do those things perfectly, then what do they actually gain? And then to reinforce that, he says, this is actually what people should be aspiring for. Otherwise, if you encourage people in karmakanda, they'll be looking all over the universe, life after life, trying to find happiness. But that's not where you find happiness. That's not where you find success and perfection in life, real value and meaning of your existence. You have to look elsewhere. People have to look elsewhere. So you can teach them that. And then he says, when they become devotees, then they'll never forget the taste that they've had in devotional service. Even though they may fall away, they'll always remember. Maybe not in this life, but in some future lifetime, something will spark their remembrance again. And besides that, in commenting on this section, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna will take care of them. this is what one thing that Narada Muni has explained to Vyasadeva here, that once they start engaging in Krishna service, then he won't forget them. Even though they fall down, they're not falling down like ordinary karmis, because now they're in Krishna's hands and Krishna will take care of them. So now today's verse, it's philosophy, you can say. Narada, you're supposed to teach them about Krishna consciousness. So one of the things they need to know, one of the most fundamental points of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, is who is God and what is this world? That's the idea. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, that's the idea here. You've explained about bhakti and bhaktas. So what is the bhakti supposed to know? This is something that the devotee should know. So here, now we have he's encouraging him to teach Krishna consciousness. So here's one of the fundamental aspects of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness that's stated in this verse. The Supreme Personality of God is himself this cosmos, and still he is aloof from it. From him only has this cosmic manifestation emanated, in him it rests, and unto him it enters after annihilation. Your good self knows all about this. I have given only a synopsis. So you know the philosophy, you should teach it to others. So now I'll begin reading the purport here. Actually, I'll just make one comment because I don't think it comes up in the purport. This phrase here, Pradesha Matram, which Prabhupada translates as a synopsis only. So Matram means only. Pradesha is literally, it's the distance between the thumb and the tip of your index finger. So basically, just like sometimes we say, I'm just going to give you a little bit, and we make a sign with our hand, like with our thumb and our forefinger. So basically, Vyasadeva says, by this little couple of lines of Sanskrit that I've just told you, that's just basically a synopsis. But you know the whole philosophy. You know all the Vedanta philosophy, and you can explain it much more clearly. But I've only given you a little tiny bit of it in this sentence here. So Srila Prabhupada's purport. For a pure devotee, the conception of Mukunda, Lord Sri Krishna, is both personal and impersonal. The impersonal cosmic situation is also Mukunda because it is an emanation of the energy of Mukunda. Now it's interesting actually in the word for word, Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada would often quote the first line. He wouldn't generally quote this whole verse, but he would often quote just the first line of this verse. Idam Vishvam Bhagavan Ivetaro, which says that this world is Iva, Bhagavan, and Itara. It's different from. So Iva is usually translated as the same, and Itara means different. So Bhagavan and the universe are the same and different. But Prabhupada, in his word for word, he translates Iva as almost the same. So he's already, in the word for word, indicating that simultaneously one and different, but not completely the same and not completely different. So this is what Prabhupada begins talking on this point here. For example, a tree is a complete unit, whereas the leaves and the branches of the tree are emanated parts and parcels of the tree. The leaves and branches of the tree are also the tree, but the tree itself is neither the leaves nor the branches. Of course, when I hear this, I think, well, yes, it is. It's the sum of those things, the leaves and the branches. But the point here seems to be something different. You can't just point to, say, one branch or one leaf and say, this is the tree, because it's not. And in some sense, it's more than the sum of the parts. The tree is not just branches and leaves. It's in a sense, a separate entity. The Vedic version that the whole cosmic creation is nothing but Brahman means that since everything is emanating from the Supreme Brahman, nothing is apart from him. So this is the idea that Sarvam Kaluidam Brahma. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes this line in his commentary on this verse. Sarvam Kaluidam Brahma. Prabhupada would also quote it a lot. Seems to be that he's referring to it here. Everything is Brahman. So what does that mean? It means that Brahman has energies in this material world, which doesn't seem like Brahman, is also Brahman, ultimately, because it's produced by the energies of Brahman, which are non-different from him. So similarly, the part and parcel hands and legs are also called the body. But the body as a whole unit is neither the hands nor the legs. So the same idea as the tree example Prabhupada was just giving. Of course, one way you can explain that is to say, if you lose part of it, then the body is still there. You're still the same, in a sense. If you lose a finger or part of your body, it hasn't changed who you are in the sense of bodily identification. So it's more than just the parts. The Lord is transcendental form, is the transcendental form of eternity, cognition, and beauty. Now, I thought this was interesting because the way Prabhupada translates Satchit Ananda here. Usually we say eternity, knowledge, and bliss. But here Prabhupada says the Lord is the transcendental form of eternity, cognition, and beauty. So this word cognition, I actually find it to be a better translation of chit than knowledge. Because knowledge, we sometimes think of knowledge as something that you have, something that you possess. You have knowledge, or a book has knowledge. So it's that kind of entity. But cognition is actually more about awareness, consciousness. Even in the Vedantita Tattvavidas Tattvam Yas Jnanam Advayam, the word jnana there is also translated as non-dual knowledge. But there it actually means consciousness. Knowledge in the sense of awareness. So that's what cognition is about. Cognition means how we understand things. You know, there's a branch of psychotherapy called cognitive therapy. Cognitive therapy. And the basic idea of cognitive therapy is that you understand things about yourself. You're probably doing things in your life that are making you unhappy. So you talk with a therapist and things get revealed and you say, oh, now I understand. So that's cognition, like cognitive therapy. When you come to certain understandings, and based on those understandings, you try to adapt that to your life, to improve your life. So cognition really means more awareness. So this is really or we can even say consciousness. I sometimes think of these terms, eternity, knowledge, and bliss, because we say that that's what we are. So you think, well, how could something be made of eternity? It doesn't seem to make sense to be made of eternity or to be made of bliss. But of course we are, in a sense, anandamaya bhasati. The absolute truth is said to be anandamaya, made of bliss. But another way to think of it is we're made of consciousness, because that's also stated in that way. We're consciousness and we're conscious. In the Bhagavad Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami talks about this idea. He says it's just like a light, because there's some debate about this among philosophers in India, in the Vedic context, about what exactly is Brahman, or what is the self. Is it only conscious of itself, or is it conscious only outside, or both, or what? So Jiva Goswami gives the example of a light, like a light bulb. So the light bulb not only lights itself, it's not only self-conscious, but it's also light and things on the outside. So the conscious self, we are consciousness, but we're also conscious. We're self-conscious, but we're also conscious of other things. So that anyway, that's the idea of cognition. I'm relating this to the idea of the way Prabhupada translates chit, chitkana. The jiva is said to be chitkana. Now sometimes chit is just a shorthand for satchitananda, or spiritual. It can simply mean spiritual. But in the context of satchitananda, then it's generally translated as knowledge, or as Prabhupada is saying here, cognition. So he's translating chit as cognition. And then of course ananda is usually translated as bliss. So Prabhupada here translates it as beauty. So these ideas seem to be related. We get happiness from beauty. That's one way to look at it. And we get happiness from love. And these are all in the same kind of thing. Beauty, happiness, love. They're on the emotional side, you can say, the aesthetic side. There's a whole science of aesthetics. What is beauty exactly? So beauty is certainly what attracts us is beauty, but love and happiness and beauty, they're all attractive things, things that we aspire for and we think of as good. So Prabhupada, he goes on here talking about beauty a little bit in the next sentence. He says, and thus the creation of the energy of the Lord. So he's saying, I'll read that sentence again. The Lord is the transcendental form of eternity, cognition, and beauty. And thus the creation of the energy of the Lord, creation of the energy, in other words, this creation which is made of the energy of the Lord, appears to be partially eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, and beautiful also. So I think the partially is supposed to modify all three of these. Partially eternal, partially full of knowledge. Krishna is full of knowledge. We're partially full of knowledge because we're part of him, so even our fullness is small. Partially eternal, partially full of knowledge, and partially beautiful also. So the material world, especially here, he's talking about the material world. Now this, of course, the whole context of this is Sambandha Gyan. Sambandha is the beginning of our progress in Krishna consciousness, the life of Krishna consciousness, Sambandha. First you have to understand, Sambandha literally means relationship. So it especially has to do with three essential aspects of reality, God, the Jiva, and the material world. So now we're hearing something about the material world and God's relationship to us. So we have these different relationships. You have the relationship, first you have these three entities, then you have the relationship between each one of them. You have the relationship between God and the material world, and God and the Jiva and the material world. So you have these different relationships. So here we're hearing about something about what is the nature of the material world and what is God's relationship to it. So he says that the material world also has its eternal in a partial sense. In other words, even we're in it, we tend to think this life is eternal. People think that way. Because it exists at least for some period of time. So you can say it's partially eternal. Eternity and time, they're synonymous. And it has some. There's some knowledge here, in a sense, and there's beauty here also. So he says, the captivated conditioned souls under the influence of the external energy, Maya, are therefore entrapped in the network of material nature, because it has these qualities in part, Satchid and Ananda. Therefore, we're attracted to them, naturally, because we belong to that. That's our essence, Satchid Ananda. So these captivated conditioned souls, they accept this as all in all, for they have no information of the Lord, who is the primeval cause. Nor have they information that the parts and parcels of the body, being detached from the whole body, are no longer the same hand or leg as when attached to the body. Similarly, a godless civilization detached from the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is just like a detached hand or leg. Such parts and parcels may appear like hands and legs, but they have no efficiency. The devotee of the Lord, Srila Vyasadeva, knows this very well. He is further advised by Narada Muni to expand the idea so that the entrapped conditioned souls may take lessons from him to understand the Lord as the primeval cause. So this idea is very important. We are... All of these things, the whole idea is that this material world and the jivas, I was talking about the relationship, so these two relationships, what is the relationship of the material world, the material energy to God, and what is our relationship to God and our relationship to the material world, the different relationships, sambandhas. So the material energy is connected to God, and we are connected to God. Like the leaves are connected to the tree, and the branches are connected to the tree, or the hands and legs are connected to the body, they're part of the body. But when they're detached from it, when the hands and legs are detached from the body, then it's useless. So people are, they're attracted to this material world, but they're not seeing God behind it. So therefore, they're detached from him. Ultimately, of course, asango hyayam purusha, the living entity, can never be completely detached from God. We're always connected to him. In our illusion, in our consciousness, we're detached from him. And therefore, we have also, in a sense, become useless. our lives are useless when there's no connection to God. So Narada has been encouraging Vyasadeva to tell people about this, explain this to them. And that's what Prabhupada is repeating here in this last sentence I read. So to continue the purport, according to the Vedic version, the Lord is naturally fully powerful, and thus both his supreme energies are always perfect and identical with him. Notice the word supreme energies. So his supreme energies, we can say, especially his antaranga shakti, his sarup shakti, sarup means his own form. So those energies are more, maybe that's what Prabhupada means here by supreme energies. His internal energies are especially identical with him. Of course, the material world is also identical with him, but it's sometimes said to be separated from him and not quite identical in the same sense. So he continues, both the spiritual and material skies and their paraphernalia are emanations of the internal and external energies of the Lord. External energy is comparatively inferior, whereas the internal potency is superior. The superior energy is living force, and therefore she is completely identical. But the external energy, being inert, is partially identical. It's interesting that Prabhupada used the pronoun she here. The superior energy is she. Of course, ultimately, the superior energy is Srimati Radharani, or all of Krishna's shaktis, ultimately, they're feminine. Krishna is the supreme Purusha, so all of the energy, energies are Prakriti, and Prakriti is considered to be feminine in relationship to the supreme Purusha. But both energies are neither equal to nor greater than the Lord.
So
this important Upanishad verse says there, Prabhupada will often quote this, the living entity is Natasyakaryam Karanam Dabidyate. This talks about Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, Brahman. He doesn't have anything to do. And no one is equal to or greater than him. So both the energies are neither equal to nor greater than the Lord, who is the generator of all energies. Such energies are always under his control, exactly as electrical energy, however powerful it may be, is always under the control of the engineer. We see so much powerful energy in this material world. In this verse I quoted, Parashya Shaktir Vividayaka Shruyate. Sometimes Prabhupada would say Krishna has unlimited energies or innumerable energies. And I sometimes think, well, it seems like we could list a number of them, but unlimited seems like you'd run out. So there must be some way of categorizing them so you get unlimited number of them. And of course, many of them are extremely powerful. Actually, we're seeing right now some tiny spark of Krishna's energy is shutting down the whole world. But those are under Krishna's control. Everything ultimately is under Krishna's control, because he's the source of the energy. Even something, we get energy, we may be able to do something with the power of the electrical energy, just like the sound now is being transmitted because of energy. So it's going out all over the place, actually. It goes all over the world. So that's a kind of power. But actually, this is just a spark of the energy that's coming from the powerhouse itself, from the power generating station. So there's so much more power there, unlimitedly more power there to power so many things, megawatts and so on. So whatever we see in this material world, even though it may be awesome and frightening, it's nothing compared to the source of that energy, Lord Krishna. Actually, I heard it said that the amount of energy that the sun produces in one second, is more than human society has used in its complete existence, at least according to the modern estimation. So there's so much power there in the sun, but Krishna creates unlimited suns. There are millions and billions and trillions of suns or stars in the sky. So and so many universes and so on. So he's certainly unlimitedly more powerful than any exhibition of power that may cause awe within us. So I'll continue here. Last paragraph. The human being and all other living beings are products of his internal energies. Thus, the living being is also identical with the Lord, but he is never equal or superior to the personality of Godhead. The Lord and living beings are all individual persons. With the help of the material energy, the living beings are also creating something, but none of their creations are equal or superior to the creations of the Lord. The human being may create a small, playful Sputnik and may throw it into outer space, but that does not mean that he can create a planet like the Earth or moon and float it in the air as the Lord does. So we have this archaic word here, Sputnik. I imagine today many people have no idea what the word Sputnik means. This was the original thing put in space. The original satellite was by the Russians, and it was called the Sputnik. So Prabhupada is using it as a generic word here for satellites. So they may be able to create a Sputnik. Actually, today we have so many, it's a problem, actually. More and more things go into space, and there's always a danger. Eventually, they'll fall down, and because there's so much water on Earth, they tend to fall in the water, but that may not always happen. In any case, we create these things. We think we're so wonderful that we can create these satellites, put them out into space to orbit the Earth, or turn with the Earth. But we can't create planets like Krishna does. Millions and millions of them, and float them in the sky. We're continuing. Men with a poor fund of knowledge claim to be equal to the Lord. They are never equal to the Lord. This can never be. The human being, after attaining complete perfection, may achieve a large percentage of the qualities of the Lord, say up to 78%. But it is never possible to surpass the Lord or to become equal with him. So this 78 is the percentage of 50 into 64. Because, as explained in the Nectar Devotion, Book of Samhita Sindhu, Krishna has 64 qualities. The jiva, ordinary jivas, can have up to 50 of those. So 50 into 68 is 78%. That seems to be where Prabhupada get this number. So we can have 78% of Krishna's qualities. Even if we're perfect, what to speak of conditioned life, even in perfection and liberation, we can have only 78%. But we can never have 100% of Krishna's qualities, even though we're part of him, or 100% of his power. In a diseased condition only, the foolish being claims to be one with the Lord and thus becomes misled by the illusory energy. The misguided living beings, therefore, must accept the supremacy of the Lord and agree to render loving service to him. For this, they have been created. Of course, we're not actually created. We exist eternally with Krishna because eternally he wants our association. We exist for his pleasure, and of course we take part in that pleasure. It's an exchange between the two, and as he enjoys, we also enjoy. But that's the purpose of our existence. For this they have been created. Without this, there cannot be any peace or tranquility in the world. So on an individual level or on a universal level or worldwide level, the same principle applies. We can't be happy individually, and the world can't be happy completely, conglomerately, unless everyone is connected to Krishna, or at least in general, the society is connected to the Lord. There can't be peace and happiness, peace or tranquility, Srila Prabhupada writes. Srila Vyasadeva is advised by Srila Narada to expand this idea in the Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavad Gita also, the same idea is explained. Surrender fully unto the lotus feet of the Lord. That is the only business of the perfect human being. So the purport, or the verse, begins with the idea of what is this material world. It's a form of Krishna, But at the same time, it's not Krishna. And we're all part of that, and unless we surrender to Krishna, we will never be successful, peaceful, and happy. I'll just read the translation again. The Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is Himself this cosmos, and still He is aloof from it. From Him only has this cosmic manifestation emanated. In Him it rests, and unto Him it enters after annihilation. Your good self knows all about this. I have given only a synopsis. One thing I found interesting about this is that it really, in some sense, foreshadows or echoes the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam, especially the first three. I just want to read those to refresh your memory. These are Srimad Bhagavatam's second canto, chapter 9, which is called Answers by Citing the Lord's Version. These are, I'm just reading three of the four, 33, 34, and 35, ninth chapter, second canto. Brahma, it is I, the Personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself, nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the Personality of Godhead, and after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the Personality of Godhead. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created and at the same time I am outside of everything. So Narada has said that what he spoke was a synopsis of Bhagavad philosophy, and of course it very closely resembles what we know as the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam. So do we have any questions today?
If there is any question, you can type on the chat room, ISKCON Alachua Hare Krishna Temple, or my phone 352-221-0041. Thank you. In one sense, Idamhi Vishwam Bhagavani Lekada, today's verse. Then we see many verses also like even Damodarasya, Namaste Sudhamya, Sura Dikhidhamya, Tadiyo Udaraya, Vishwashadhamya, the whole creation in your stomach. So in one sense, we are never separated from Krishna. But then the perception created that we are separated, we cannot see Him, so the fear arises, bhayam ditiya. Is there like a cause of that fear, like to manifest that we don't see His connection? What is the actual cause? Is like a misuse of, I mean, idea is there, but is there like a, so we can put it back?
Well, Prabhupada gives the example of a child, like when the child is separated from the mother. You ever seen a lost child? They're so afraid, they're screaming and crying, and because the mother, I was hearing Prabhupada talk about this in the context of the material creation, the material creation is like the womb, and the father plants the seed. So if the father is like, if the child is walking with the father, then is separated from the father, then he's afraid, because that's his, as a child is maturing, they're so dependent on that. That's part of their identity. You know, as children grow, they kind of, eventually their own identity, their own personality comes out more and more. They're independent. So we're helpless children, really, eternally, because of our relationship with Krishna. So if we forget that, if we get lost in this material world, then it's a frightening situation just by the very nature of it. There can't be any happiness there. There's that other, but Prabhupada would quote this verse, I think it's by Yamunacharya, Bhavantam eva anucharan nirantara prashanta nishesha manoratantara adaham aikantika nityakinka paharshayashyami sanata jivatam. So the devotee is praying that he wants to become Krishna's servant, because if he, Prabhupada gives the example, it's just like the dog needs a master to be happy. In other words, he's a street dog and he's suffering. So sanata jivatam, so the devotee is praying, I want to be sanata, I want to have my Lord again, nata. I want to be with my Lord. Because it's a frightened condition naturally to be not have that. And of course we see it naturally. Just like now, of course, it's a very fearful time, so people want protection, they want security. So they're willing to give up a lot for that security. Because it's natural to peace. And just like Prabhupada here, he used the word tranquility. Peace or tranquility in the world. So that's what we want, but we can't have that unless we have Krishna. We never feel secure unless we know that Krishna is there and we feel that. We know it actually, realize that.
In that episode, Mother Shyamapriya says, thank you for nice quoting the verse from Chatusloka, comparing it to this verse. My question was that when the child does not see his mother, so because the based on that relationship he's disturbed that it is not connecting? Or
yeah, because it's part of the child's nature, really. None of us are independent, of course. We're social animals, as it said. So most people like to have friends or family or some relationships. But for a child, especially, a child is completely 100% dependent, especially an infant. Can't live, can't survive without the parents there, or at least one of the parents. So that fear is there, it just comes automatically. The child feels it very, very deeply. So we also, we're in the material world, we're feeling it deeply. You can say this is an indication of that reality. Otherwise, why don't we feel comfortable here, naturally? But bhaya, ahara nidra bhaya, mitun. So bhaya is constant in the material world. That's an indication, you can say. That's evidence that this is not our natural place. We're not in our element here.
There's one devotee from Cleveland, Ohio. The living being's disease is a poor fund of knowledge. He may achieve some tiny success in one area or another. Is this what causes him to falsely speculate he's God himself? It seems like such an outrageous leap to consider oneself God. Makes sense.
I don't know if I heard everything. Poor fund of knowledge. Let me read this again. The living being's disease is a poor fund of knowledge. So that's our fundamental problem is that we don't have knowledge. He may achieve some tiny success in one area or another. Is this what causes him, oh I see, to falsely speculate that he's God himself? It seems like such an outrageous leap to consider oneself God. Yeah, that's a good point. In fact, we tell people that everyone thinks they're God and they say, what? I don't think I'm God. Although, of course, there are some people that do because they're being told by bogus teachers that everyone is God. But I think in a sense there's the implication that we're thinking that we're God because we think we can control. What is God? The Sanskrit word for God is Ishvara. You say the absolute truth is Brahman, but God is Ishvara. Prabhupada talks about this in the preface to the Bhagavatam, how there are these two concepts. So Ishvara means controller. So if we're thinking that we are in control in some way or other, and especially, of course, the more knowledge we have, the more we may think that we're in control. And in some sense, that's true. Just like scientists, they're able to control more, like Prabhupada would, sending a Sputnik in space, because they got more knowledge of how the material laws work. They were able to put satellites into space. So the more knowledge they have, the more they think they're in control. So in that sense, they're thinking they're God. And even today, of course, the idea is we'll just get more and more and more and more knowledge. Eventually, we'll know everything. Because we've invented the computers, and in a sense, the computers can think for us. They're self-learning with artificial intelligence. And they'll get more and more, and eventually this whole universe we'll see as like a supercomputer, and we'll be able to control it, just like we can control the computers now. So this idea goes on and on and on. Huh? So in a sense, that's the idea there. So in a small way or in a big way, we think the more knowledge we have, the more we can control things, and therefore we can be God. We can act like we're God. But of course, we find, Prabhupada said, that God has a toothache. You say that you're God, but you have to go to the dentist because you have a toothache. So our bodies are crumbling right before our eyes, and so many things are out of our control. We may be able to control a little bit. This point is actually there in the prayers by the personified Vedas. Yes, you have some control. The jiva has some tiny control, but not ultimately. Krishna has, or the absolute truth, has the ultimate control.
One more question. This is from Mother Madhumati. So the religious principles that Vyasadeva taught before, did it not teach that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is all-pervading? Did he not teach what the verse is saying today?
Well, sometimes the ideas may be there, here and there, but they're hard to find. That's the idea. Maybe there's a line or two here and there. Now, the philosophy, it's there in the Upanishads, actually. But the Upanishads tend to stress this, of course, just gets into a big philosophical problem. How is there this material world if everything is one? Everything is Brahman. But we see, no, it's not. Look at all the variety here that we're seeing. This whole material world, it doesn't seem to be Brahman. So how can everything be one? But they say it's all one. So these ideas are there. There's debates are there, you can say, in the Upanishads. But most people don't read those. And especially what Narada seems to be decrying. He does decry jnana, but especially karmakanda. But jnana, because people don't get the point, because it's in many ways it's hidden. Because part of the process of jnana is to take you step by step. So the first point you get to is you see the oneness of everything, or you're taught that everything is one. But there are many verses in the Upanishads that also talk about the duality. A very famous one, dva suparna sayuja sakaya samanam viksham purushasrujati, how there are two birds on the tree, the branch of the tree, and one is enjoying the fruit. So dva suparna, there are two birds, it says specifically. So there's the jiva, or atma, and paramatma. So there's spiritual energy and there's material energy. So that idea is there, that God is the universe, but that he's also different from it. But the idea that's stressed generally in the Upanishads, it comes out more clearly, is the oneness of everything. So it's there, but unless one is inclined to accept, to have some devotion, actually, according to one's devotional credit or pious credit, one is able to see it and understand it better. And of course, that's why Vyasadeva wrote the Vedanta Sutra, to show clearly what the Upanishads are teaching, because so many people are getting the wrong idea. So it's there, but it's not prominent, and it's hard to find, and you need a devotee, guru, to show it to you. Which is, of course, this is one of the points that Narada Muni made to Vyasadeva. He says, you understand, so you should be teaching it. Only what is the word that he used? Here it is. Only a very expert personality deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. So only a rare person understands these things. And of course Vyasadeva does, so Narada is encouraging him to teach it. All right, so we're done here. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Shows how many people?
Yeah.
60 people?
Yeah. That's nice. I guess they have something to do.
Yeah.